I'm Theo Vaughn. Welcome to Allegedly.
And I'm Matthew Cole Weiss, your co-host. And today we have a legendary guest with us, LDP.
Lou Diamond Phillips.
LDP. You down with LDP? Yeah, you know me.
Do people call you LDP?
Yeah, they do. It just rolls right off the tongue.
I'm in that club. I'm Matthew Cole Weiss.
Here's my point. You know, the three-name thing was started by ethnic actors like myself and Edward James Olmos and Philip Michael Thomas, and now we got you and, you know, Patrick whatever, you know.
Chad Michael Murray.
You white guys got to take everything from us. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
We had to establish our identity by using three names, you know.
We don't
have big names, but we have long names.
Okay. Well, you can call me Matt.
It's not true. Don't call him at all.
I simply jest.
MCW.
You won't be missing anything. Don't call him at all.
So, yes, today we have Lou LDP here, who, you know, legendary star, but currently you've got lots going on, man.
Oh, my goodness.
Blind Spot and Longmire and the 33.
In theaters now.
We were just saying, you seem to, you're like a record in this town. I mean, you have worked, it seems like, since you were a child.
I didn't start as early as some, but I did my first professional gig when I was 19. A comedy troupe called The Zero Hour back in Fort Worth, Texas. I did La Bamba when I was 24, and that's been 28 years now. So, yeah, I've been doing this for three decades. And, you know, I can't even go to my IMDb page because it just makes me tired. You know, so I just want to take a nap.
Well, our podcast is called Allegedly. And so what we do is we kind of look at, we peel the skin back of Hollywood and look at what it's really like to live here, to work here, to try to succeed here, the ups and downs and all that sort of stuff. But it's also a competitive podcast where Theo and I go up against each other in three rounds and you serve as the celebrity judge and celebrity interview.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's excellent.
Yep.
So the round one is the storytelling round where Theo and I each have 5 minutes at max to tell a story about something that's happened to us. Mm-hmm. And then you get to judge which story you like better.
Oh, that's excellent.
And we can intervene during the stories or whatever. It's kind of an open forum, but Matt will have 5 minutes on the clock. Sean, can we get that? All right. And this is going to be Matt's story.
Okay. I'm going to tell a story, and this is in my mind because last night I went to the premiere of Creed, this new Sylvester, the Rocky movie.
Hey, thanks for supporting. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Have you ever worked with Sylvester?
You're going to go the distance. No, I've never worked with Sylvester, but, you know, our daughters played soccer against each other once, and he told me not to bribe the referee because he has more money than me.
Is that true?
That's a true story.
Yeah, that's great.
Do I win? Do I get points? Ding, ding,
ding. You win.
Yeah, you got points already.
So this is a story, and by the way, the movie's pretty good. It's really good, and they're already talking Oscar nominations for him. My dad, who you know my dad, mm-hmm. he is a very simple guy. He's very sweet, generous, but not into the Hollywood scene or whatever. He lives outside of Philadelphia. And when they come and visit, you know, it's like exactly what you think. These parents coming out and seeing Hollywood, and it's so cool. And so I took them, this was a couple of years ago, one of the first times they came out here, I took them to Cut Steakhouse, which is a Wolfgang Puck thing at the Beverly Wilshire. Yeah, very fancy schmancy. And, when people come out and visit, they want to see celebrities and things like that. It happens all the time. So we walk in, and Sylvester Stallone is there.
Ooh.
And when we walked past, my dad did not see him. So I saw him and my mom saw him, but we walked past and we sit in the booth and his back is to him. And my mom was like, oh my God, did you? Especially because I'm from Philly and my mom went to the same school as him. And my mom was like, oh my God, did you see Sylvester Stallone? I was like, yeah. And my dad's like, I didn't. And I was like, oh, okay. Now he's like, what do I do? Because even if he had turned around, he would only see the back of him.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right, this is a little trick you do.
And you got to see the front of a celebrity.
Yeah, it doesn't count if you see the back.
Well, depends on who the celebrity is.
Good point.
That's a good point. If it's Travolta. Go on.
So then I said, this is what you do. You go to the bathroom, quote unquote. You get up to go to the bathroom, which is around that way.
It's a good
and then
play.
You come back in like a minute, you wash your hands or whatever, and then you get a clear look, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, all right, gotcha. And so he gets up to go to the bathroom and he walks by him, but he doesn't see him because he's walking by him. He has to see him
other direction, yeah.
And 5 minutes go by, 10 minutes go by, 20 minutes go by, Sylvester Stallone gets up and leaves after he pays the bill, right? And I'm like, where the fuck is Dad? Like, what the hell's going on here? And my mom's like, I don't know. And so I texted him and I'm like, are you okay? And he doesn't respond. And I'm like, should I get up and go do something? And about 5 minutes after, he comes walking back in and he's looking and Sylvester's not even there. He's already gone. And he sits down. He's like, where is he? I'm like, where is he? Where the fuck have you been? And he said, well, you said go to the bathroom. And I kind of had to go to the bathroom when I got into the bathroom. And I was like, but the whole point was so you could see Sylvester Stallone and you were in the bathroom for a half hour. He's like, you know, this is...
I found a nice magazine.
Exactly.
I got comfortable.
That's what he said. The bathrooms here are really nice because you're at the Beverly Wilshire. And I was like, well, you miss Sylvester Stallone. I'm sorry. And I was like, you got to learn how to do these things. So he missed him. And so that is my story about my dad, who's really cute. The only other celebrity thing I took him to is I took him to the premiere of Signs, mm-hmm. the Mel Gibson movie. And he's very naive and whatnot. And he opened the door to the car at valet and he knocked over this woman as he opened up the passenger car. And it ended up being M. Night Shyamalan's wife.
No.
Yeah. And so my dad was like, she was. And then my dad goes up and apologizes to M. Night and then proceeds to say, my son's a filmmaker. Like, do you want to hire him? And I'm like, Dad, what does that even mean? Like, he's a filmmaker. Does he want me to hire me to like take over his movies? I don't understand. But it was very sweet and very cute.
Yeah,
and that's my dad. My dad's a really nice, wonderful guy.
Yeah. The dad is wonderful. The story is horrible. Horrible.
No, I think that's funny. Sylvester Stallone and taking dumps and whatever.
I'm going to reserve judgment until I see it.
I love your attitude.
It's all about comparison, man.
There you go.
It's perspective.
Okay.
All right, Theo, what do you got?
My story involves a lot of Latinos. I was a huge La Bamba fan growing up, of course. You know,
yes.
Who isn't? Most of the world.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I'm not really Latino, but I play one on TV.
You're not really, huh?
No, I'm not. I mean, it's kind of, you know, there was a whole Remezcla did a fantastic article about why I'm an honorary. Latino,
yeah,
because I've represented Latinos in so many films, you know.
So I mean, many,
you know, you start with La Bamba and Stand and Deliver, and then you know, you go to the Chilean Miners in the 33, and everybody just goes, of course, of course, he's Latino, Filipino, what the hell is that,
right?
You know? Do you find that people want you to be?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, you know, now that I've done this for 30 years, most people know that I'm not.
Right.
But there are still those people who start rattling off Spanish to me.
Right.
And I go, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to be one of those people for a minute. So I'm going to talk about the first time, this is my story, I ever met a Latino. I got 5 minutes on the clock, Sean?
First time.
So cinco minutos.
Yes.
All right.
You heard the man.
The first time I ever met a Latino.
So I'm from a small town and we didn't have any Latinos.
Small town, what state?
Louisiana.
Oh, well, there you go, man.
So,
yeah.
And I'm sure you shot some work down there for sure, huh?
I've been through there a couple of times. I mean, the most, I think, infamous was the first time I went to New Orleans. Being an actor, first of all, I started drinking Hurricanes at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, wow.
And by midnight, I was on my knees in the middle of an intersection in the French Quarter screaming, Stella! And a cop car drove by and they literally just shook their heads. They didn't bother to get out or do anything. They just drove around me, looked at me and went, oh, fucking idiot.
Because everybody's there doing Stella.
Oh, there's a contest every year for people to do that if you want to re-enter.
What? Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a contest you can go and do once a year, the Tennessee Williams contest.
Wow.
Nice.
So my story is like in our town, it was outside of New Orleans by about 50 miles, and we didn't ever, no one ever had any Latinos. You'd heard rumors of them, but you'd never seen any, right? And then we get this one kid who came in, who moved into town named Juancito, right?
Juancito.
I don't know what it means, but it sounded romantic, right? So all the ladies are all of a sudden in a tizzy, and we're in like fifth grade, so suddenly chicks seem to be like budding breasts and stuff, and everybody kind of thinks it's for Juancito, right? So,
well, you know, Latino men have that effect on women. You know, their best breasts are to bud and the sap starts to flow like it's springtime.
Yeah. Well, it was, it got really springtime in our neighborhood, right? So, Juancito hadn't really said anything around school. Like, he'd just been kind of quiet and suave, and his hair looked very romantic, you know? So, one day we have sex education in fifth grade, right? And he stands up, and I guess this is like the first time that everybody kind of heard him talk, and he's like, hey, Mr. Blackwell owns. He's like, what does pop that cherry mean, owns? That's what he said, right?
Wow.
But
stand and deliver. Yeah,
right. Well, he did.
Yeah.
But then here's what happened. He had some type of like a Tourette's or something,
oh,
right?
No.
So then he goes, what does pop that cherry mean? Oh, pop that cherry mean? Oh, pop that cherry mean? Oh, right? He just kind of said it like four times.
You know, he was just like a budding rapper. That's all.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, like he had his own remix, right?
Exactly.
Totally normal. So anyway, everybody was like kind of laughing and like we're all shy and nervous. Anyway, it's fifth grade, right? But so then we also started to learn more about this kid. One of his things was he was very religious. He liked to climb up trees, right, to try and his allegedly to get closer to God, right? That mm-hmm. was kind of his thing. He felt like more in arboles, he called them, which is Spanish for trees, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So one tree he climbed up, like the highest tree on our playground, right? It's about 2.5 stories. He proceeds to fall out of it, breaks both of his arms, right? Both of his Spanish arms. So
no
now, right now well, he's in.
Was he climbing a Spanish moss?
No, he might have been. Actually, he might have been.
You have a lot of that in Louisiana.
That's really quick, actually. Yeah. So then he broke both of his arms, which oddly made him look very kind of Christian-esque, like kind of a mm-hmm. Jesus symbol, you know, because both of his arms were in casts. Anyway, he after his arms got better, he made a T-shirt that he wore to school one time, and it said. Juan the Sweet Raper. It's supposed to say rapper, but he actually only spelled it with one P.
No, that's
I swear,
not true.
I swear to God.
Wow.
And it said Juan the Sweet Raper.
Wow.
Okay.
Which turned some of the girls on even more, probably.
Yeah, wow.
But then fast forward to, he moved out of town. I don't know what happened. His family was just passing through, you know? And another boy moved into town who was kind of a thicker Asian boy who everybody thought was Latino.
Yeah, like me.
Right.
Yeah. I'm a secret Asian man.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're 00 Asian.
Yeah, I am.
And then a group started actually called Whites Against Mexicans.
Oh,
and
great.
They would kind of beat on this like kind of thicker Asian kid named Jason. But he was fine. Everything ended up being fine. But
there was only one of him.
Yeah, there was only one of him. Yeah. And he wasn't even Mexican. He wasn't
even
Mexican, yeah. But here was the sweetest thing about
him. Don't you worry, he's going to do just fine. You know what I'm saying? A high caramel, beige, whatever, man. You ain't white, so yeah. That's just it. White's against the color scale.
Yeah.
So anyway, and he didn't have the heart to tell the kid that he wasn't Mexican, though. And that's what I really felt a lot of pride, you know, that he was like standing up for Mexican culture in a town that had none.
Kind yeah. of. Well,
so he ended up in IT, actually. He's kind of a very, very silent man. I mean, who knows?
Well, that story was all over the place. That's all I have to say. It was all over the place.
It was, but it's a true story, and it's a fact. You know, it's part of my life, and it's something that, you know.
I'm just saying, storytelling-wise, mine had a beginning, middle, and end.
Oh, yeah, your dad went to the shitter. Okay,
but he missed Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, yeah. You know.
But okay. You know what? I'm not the judge.
You're not.
So,
yeah.
LDP?
Yeah, yeah, you know, I'm sorry. I got to go for diversity, you know.
I've
what?
Been,
and I've been, you know, it's kind of an equal opportunity, you know, pay mm-hmm. it forward kind of thing. And not to mention the fact that it allowed me to do a number of accents. So, you know,
story was it's all about you.
Well, no, it is all about me.
Yeah,
it's about interaction and it's about mm-hmm. representation. And, you know, so I'm in there, you know, and to get a, you know, a story like that in Hollywood is really, really, you know, it's an opportunity. It's a teachable moment, as yeah. we say.
Wow. Would it have helped had it not been Sylvester Stallone and it had been somebody else?
You know,
yeah, you throw Pacquiao in there. You got him. I bet.
I'm all over that.
I mean, it was Pacquiao. It was,
there you go.
And that is.
Manny Pacquiao is.
Yeah, that's the Filipino boxer who's
gotcha.
Like world famous.
I do sports.
And he was House yeah. of Reps. Was he still House of Reps or no?
Was
he a representative? Was he a representative?
Yeah, no, he's a congressman now. As a yeah. matter of the funny thing, random story. Literally, I got a phone call a couple of months ago. From the Philippines,
yeah.
From a lot of Filipino representatives, and they said, listen, we want you to go to Tokyo to represent the Philippines in the FIBA bid for the World Basketball Championship.
Wow.
And you're going with Manny Pacquiao.
No!
Yeah, so Manny Pacquiao and I were the representatives. We lost the bid to frickin' Yao Ming and the Chinese, but, you know, we were their representatives.
Representative.
You know, never back up, never give up, by golly. You know what I'm saying? I've never played I played Filipino once in a movie, but I had to write it called Ambition. You know?
Well, look, that's an amazing story. And that leads us into our second round, I think, because we have questions for you. And some of these are going to revolve around some of this. In this round, you just are going to end up judging who's the better interviewer.
Theo and I are very different.
Wow.
Theo and I are different. Matt believes in homosexuality, and I'm still dating women currently.
You can believe in homosexuality without actually having to, you know, join the club.
Exactly. Well, you haven't met Theo. I am a card-carrying member of said club, and I'm Jewish, and I'm from Philadelphia, whereas Theo is he believes in that Jesus fella and likes these women who I don't get.
Well, they are pesky, and I admit that they're starting to lead men astray.
You know, you guys are like the white male, you know, the View.
We are.
Except my view is very narrow. Yes. His is very wide.
There you go.
But that's how it works, you know? And we've been friends for about a decade now, so we always pick each other up whenever we're at rock bottom in this town.
Good for you for being sensitive and, you know, expanding your horizons. That's just great.
I'm trying.
And I have Broadway cred, so.
Yes, you know, you do, man.
Yeah, you were Tony Award nominee. We know some of this. Yeah. All right, let's get into it, Matthew.
All right, I want to start first because this is something that I also have a personal connection to, and is, did you go to the Biggest Loser camp?
I did.
My mom. I sent my mom there.
Is she still alive?
She is. It was like dropping off a kid at camp. She called me the night of, like in tears, and this was a gift I got her because I knew she wanted to. She struggled with it, and she wanted to do something, and this was when I was working and was making money. So I did that, and then I dropped her off, and she called me crying, like, please pick me up. Like, I don't want to be here anymore.
Oh, no, I understand. And I was doing the same thing. Where's my stuff, man? Please, why did you go? I went for the 33. The miners were trapped down there for 69 days, but they went 17 days without people knowing, you know, that they were still alive.
Wow.
And they were surviving on a teaspoon of tuna, like a quarter of a cookie and a sip of water a day. So as soon as I got the gig, Patricia Regan, the director, you notice how I did that with the sort of
I rolled
the tongue and everything.
It is pretty sexy.
Chubbing out.
But they sent Jacob Vargas, Tenoch Huerta, and I out there because we went on a crash diet. And so I figured, it's the Hollywood thing, it's the Biggest Loser. And I think I'm in pretty good shape.
Yeah, right.
All right. I went out there and I thought, okay, they're going to give us some pointers. They're going to, you know, show us some calisthenics and, you know, give us a diet, you know, with a menu and whatever. No, man, we were out there for like 10 hours and I freaking thought they were going to kill me.
Wow.
I swear to God, it was relentless.
It is pretty.
You know, up and down hills and running on the beach. And I mean, first of all, it's a gorgeous place. But, when you're going into cardiac arrest, the beauty is lost on you.
Completely.
And so I during the day, all day long, I'm thinking, how the hell does somebody carrying an extra $1.50 manage this?
Wow. Completely.
You know, I just don't know.
But you go, if they can do it, then I can do it.
And were the trainers pushing you?
Oh my God. Yeah, the trainers were pushing me. They were kicking me. They were doing everything.
They weren't letting you off the hook.
No, not
a celebrity, you know, guest of the thing. That's pretty cool.
I mean, you know, and Robert Huizinger.
Dr. H.
He's a lovely, lovely man.
Yeah.
But I mean, he is serious. He has a heart attack about this stuff. And you know, I mean, the producer said, you know, the guys need to drop weight. Well, he was going to get it off us.
How much weight did you lose?
I lost 18 pounds overall. Now, here's the thing.
Overnight?
No. It felt like it.
Did it?
You know, like his dad, I took one good dump and that was it. I was, you know, a nice 20-minute dump and boom. Yeah,
that's for your dad.
That's it. But the thing that is heartbreaking is that, so I go on this crash diet. They put me on 1,200 calories a day. I went ahead and shaved it to 1,000. In 3 weeks, I dropped 15 pounds. I get a panicked phone call from Patricia, the director from Colombia, and she says, one of our sets burned down. We have to change the schedule. Put the weight back on.
What?
That's what I said.
That sounds horrible because but it sounds awesome. It's like you can go eat whatever you want.
No, except for the fact that I know that I got to take it off eventually.
Right.
So
right.
I said, well, when am I going to lose the weight? And she goes, over the Christmas break. And I went, oh, great. There goes Thanksgiving. There goes Christmas. I'm a huge foodie. I love to cook. So I cooked for everybody else and ate a freaking celery stick for Thanksgiving.
That sounds like torture.
Yeah.
The sad dad in the corner.
Wow. But you've managed, have you managed to keep the weight off, or how do you maintain it?
You look very fit now.
Well, thank you.
Very fit.
Oh, thank you.
Very fit.
And you're not the gay one.
I'm not.
So that's great.
I'm trying.
And by the way, questionable.
Well, I'm trying. It's hard out here.
This show is called Allegedly for a reason.
Allegedly, and his name is Theo. His name, I mean, come on,
it
Theo.
Yeah, it didn't say it. It's an I gave you. Don't say it like that.
You don't say it like that? Oh, okay.
No, it's fine.
I've kept the weight off. I'm still lighter than I was because I put the weight back on. Not all of it,
right.
You know, because I kind of stayed with, you know, the whole regimen. I thought, okay, you know, I'm here. I might as well, you know, hang out. And I just did a film this summer where I took off another 12 pounds. I play Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker.
My God.
Yeah, the serial killer.
Wow, a murderer.
Yeah, and I play him in the last couple of weeks of his life when he was dying of lymphoma. So once again,
a murderer that's dying?
Yeah, how about that, you know?
That's ironic. Have you ever wanted to murder someone?
No.
Yeah.
No, fortunately not.
Good.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty boring that way. You know, like the Latino thing. I'm not a tough guy, but I play one on TV.
I'm gonna get into that. So, I mean, I hate to say it, but most people think you're Latino, probably.
Yeah.
And is that like? Is there a point where you actually put out like an APB? Like, look, I'm not Mexican. Like, I respect it and I love the culture and it's amazing, yeah. But I can't be that. Because you're like, I mean, especially after La Bamba, you're kind of like the male, like living mm-hmm. Selena to yeah. some people, I feel like.
An LDP, APB.
Yeah. I was an APB in this case stands for Anglo Points Bulletin.
There you go.
You know, so.
Of course the white people are asking for this.
No, I mean, no, for 30 years, I mean, I've been honest and, you know, what's wonderful is that every community that I've represented has been grateful, maybe too strong a word. But, you know, being, you know, ambiguously ethnic, I've played all sorts of things.
It seems like you've gone through a lot of different, almost cultures. Like you're like this conduit
amount.
For.
And I never set out to be a spokesperson or an ambassador, but it just sort of happened. You know, I remember I was actually having a glass of wine with, and of course his name went right out of my head. Gregory Peck.
Mm-hmm.
Notice how I dropped that.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, hold on, let me pick that up for you.
Yeah, exactly. And Mr. Peck said, Lou, you put me in mind of my good friend Tony Quinn. You know, so it's like, great. I'm the Anthony Quinn of my generation, which is wonderful.
Wow.
But I've resented.
Oh, yeah, because he was Zorba the Greek and.
You know, and Native American
exactly.
And Mexican. You know, so it's the same situation for me in that, you know, I've represented a number of Latino, you know, communities, but also a number of Native American communities.
Right.
And as a result, I mean, the Lakota Nation adopted me and gave me a name
right.
after the Young Guns films. Starkeeper.
Starkeeper.
Exactly. Wachakpi Aglukki. And then just last year, the Cheyenne Nation, for my work in Longmire, where I play Henry Standing Bear,
yep.
Adopted me into the Lame Deer Reservation up in Montana as well and gave me a Cheyenne name, which is Khotane, which is wolf.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, I think every community seems to know that I come at it with respect.
100%.
And that I'm going to represent them with, you know, with dignity and integrity and try to get it right, man. Because, you know, like all, you know, a lot of people, some of whom are running for president, you know, I mean, they just paint every community with the same brush. Well, all those Latinos, you know, are you know, like this. And they're not. I mean, every community is individual and different and has their distinct, you know, cultural touchstones, much like the Native American communities. And so there's a specificity that has to be, you know, addressed every time I take on a role.
And is that tough that every time you, like, even if you go or like going to events and stuff, because I can imagine as you get like, you know, as you play more characters that are of different ethnicities and mm-hmm. different cultures, representing different cultures, that a lot of these cultures that are, you know, trying to get their voice out, you know, latch on you or partner up with you mm-hmm. or, you know, show their respect for your portrayal of the character. Do you ever like getting out of your car and you're like, shoot, what am I today? Like, am I like, like, do I need to like, cause that's how I feel like I would get confused.
I am a citizen of the planet.
There you go.
You know? And so, yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, it's all in the approach and yeah, I'm me. Yeah. It's hard enough to be somebody else, you know? So I go in, but you know, yeah, I've been asked to be spokesperson for, you know, a number of different groups.
It almost feels like your calling. Does it almost feel like it's part of your calling in life?
In a weird way, man. Yeah. You know, the mantle was bestowed upon me and, I accept it gratefully because it's allowed me to, you know, follow my dream and do this career that I enjoy. And I mean, you know, especially in today's world, people need a voice. They, you know, And sometimes I can be that guy who holds the spotlight. You know what I mean? I mean, I represent the military,
right?
You know,
yeah,
in a number of situations. And that's the thing. It's like, you know what? Yes, I get to play heroes on screen, but I'm not really one. Okay, I'm an actor. I'm an interpreter. I'm a storyteller. But if I'm telling these people's stories, then we need to, you know, give credit where credit is due and shine the light on them.
Right. On the flip side, do you feel that there's typecasting and that, you know, you're always playing the gangster or something along those lines?
You know, when I started in Dallas, Texas, yeah, because I was one of the few ethnic guys in that talent pool. I literally kept a red bandana and a switchblade in my car. It's like, I got an audition. Okay, here we go.
Right, exactly.
I'll cut you, woman. You hear me? You know, and but it's you know, it's opened up a bit. I've actually played white guys well, which is, that's very challenging. You know, I mean, talk about some cultural texture there. Yeah, no.
Apparently, we all sound like Jimmy Stewart in Canada.
Well, I'm so sorry.
I'll take it.
I've been watching a lot of Fargo, so you know, it's a great show. But the thing about it is, yes, I'm always going to be cast for what I look like, and occasionally, you know, people think outside the box. I mean, you know, Courage Under Fire, Monfries, you know, that was fantastic. Stargate Universe, Colonel Telford, Numbers, Ian Edgerton, for God's sakes. You know, so I've been fortunate in that I get an opportunity, you know, like that. But I'd be stupid to say, that's it. I'm not playing any more ethnic guys. You know, I'm actually white on the inside. You know, don't say I'm half Scott Irish. You know, was I in Braveheart? No, of course not. You know, the fucker didn't cast me. And I look great in a kilt.
All right.
What's another impersonation you do? What's one that you love to do?
Yeah, apparently, this is great. Well, give me your Katharine Hepburn.
You're my knight in shining armor, mister, and you're going to get on that horse, and you're going to go, go, go.
Oh, she had Rudy? Do, was I that actually, Rudy?
No, that was on Golden Pond. Come on.
I haven't seen that.
Katharine Hepburn and Rudy.
I actually do. Can you imagine?
Yeah, go, till we get across that goal line. Today's the day, boys.
Yeah, Rudy.
Yeah, we're going to do an end around and catch those fuckers with their pants down.
My friend and I, we used to do voices, Jimmy Stewart and Katharine Hepburn, but saying disgusting, very graphic stuff like, I remember the time that Gregory Peck fucked me from behind, like things like that. And I was double teamed by, you know, Jimmy Stewart.
That's excellent.
That's what we did. So my question is, now you're 53 now. Right?
Oh yeah.
Wow. Really?
Oh God. Yeah.
Look fantastic.
Look great.
Yes. Oh no, dude. I've earned every year of it.
You look great. We've had some 40-year-olds in here that look horrible.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's Hollywood for you. You know what I'm saying?
It's not your Hollywood, though.
No, it's not my Hollywood.
What do you think when you look back at your career and the decades and also just, you know, personally and professionally, would you do things differently when you look back?
Or how you say that. You know, I've gotten 4 Lifetime Achievement Awards, and I say the same thing every single time. It's like, I'm not done.
Yeah.
All right, I mean, here I am with doing my memoirs with Matt. It's like, you know, come on, dude.
Sorry. Okay. No, I just wanted, looking back, like... Yeah.
You don't seem done at all. You don't seem like that kind of guy.
No, I'm not saying done.
No, okay, good.
I actually think some of the best is yet to come.
I think so, too. I think especially with, like, I mean, I hate to say this, but I feel like so many more roles are opening up for people that even look ethnic these days.
Yeah.
That those opportunities are probably going to be even more
prevalent.
That's
what Shonda Rhimes calls the normalization of Hollywood. You know, I think we're finally starting to reflect what America actually looks like.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
right.
Which is great. To your question,
yes.
Matt. Yeah, man, I look back. I have very few regrets. Regrets. I have a few, but then again, too few to mention.
What a showman.
Well, thank you. You know,
it's like Jerry O'Connell kind of a little bit.
Yeah, I love it.
Really?
He came in and he was...
he's amazing. That guy
He's a sweetheart.
Captivating.
And he's been around forever.
Yeah.
You know, I've been incredibly fortunate. You know, are there some films that I might not have done? Sure. But the experiences were fantastic. You know, I mean, I met some wonderful people and you know, it contributed to my ongoing education. If there's one thing that I can put my finger on, I think, you know, in my late 20s, early 30s, when suddenly I was famous, which is something I never expected to be.
Right.
You know, I always wanted to be just a working actor. I started in the theater, started out doing, you know, bit parts and character roles, you know, in Texas. And all of a sudden, you know, here I was, you know, carrying films and top-lining films and, You know, I think that got into my head a little bit, and I think it stiffened me up, so to speak, well, in more ways than one.
Hey, now you're talking my language.
There you go, baby. I look back, and I'll never admit to which films, but I all of a sudden thought I had to be a leading man. I was playing the role of being a movie star, both in front of and you know the camera and in my real life, and I think it made me self-conscious. I think it constipated my
creative flow.
My creative flow. Once again, we're back to the
to my dad
to the bowels.
Where's
of
Sylvester?
Don't you stop this shit. So there were some roles that I really thought I could have done more. If I'd approached it as a character as opposed to a a movie star.
Right.
And finally I relaxed and let go of that and said, you know what, I do what I do and just need to live in front of the camera instead of trying to project a certain image.
I think that's a great answer.
That is a great answer. Very well composed. You worked with Mark Wahlberg on The Big Hit in 1998. Does that dude get a lot of ass or what? Because he seems like the kind of dude that he has this look on his face like he's gotten all the ass in the world.
He has.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something, man. First of all, there's a lot. The Big Hit is one of my absolute favorite films.
Oh, that's awesome.
Number one, because it's a comedy.
Yeah.
But number two, it was so ahead of its time. It preceded Pulp Fiction. It preceded Crouching Tiger. And people didn't know what the hell to do with it. I mean, they're kind of, getting hip to it now. And it's become this cult film. But, it's a hip-hop, black comedy, Hong Kong action movie.
Everything.
I'll preface, the story about going out with Mark with this story, and that is I was doing the wardrobe fitting, and I'm going through all the things, and Che Kirk Wong, a wonderful first American film, Chinese Hong Kong action director, John Woo was one of our producers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm going through the wardrobe thing. I said, Kirk, I'm just missing one piece of wardrobe. He goes, what's that? I said, the locker room scene, you want me in, your shorts, like a gym suit or something. I go, oh, no, you want nothing. I went, what? He goes, you want nothing, you look good. I said, Kirk, you don't understand. I'm in a locker room scene, okay, with Mark Wahlberg and Antonio, not Banderas, but Antonio Sabato.
Right.
They're both underwear salesmen. Have you seen those abs and those asses? And then Bokeem Woodbine, and let me say something about Bokeem. He's a talented guy in many, many ways.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm 10 years older than these cats. I can't be naked next to them. No, you look good. So this is the crew that I'm hanging out with, and we're going out after, and it's like, I had a pretty,
You had a robust.
I had a respectful, attitude toward myself. Let me tell you something. I was humbled.
Wow.
I was like Uncle Lou going out with the Beatles. Okay. You go into a club with Antonio and Bokeem and Mark and it's just like, I'll just hold the door. I'll just be over here. You guys need drinks? Just let me know. I'll just be hanging in the corner.
Interesting you should tell this story, because when we posted on in social media, someone actually wrote in and said, I have heard that LDP is very well endowed. So I think maybe you did hold your own, and you're being
maybe
modest right now.
LDP also stands for Long Dong Phillips.
So you will not confirm nor deny.
I will not confirm nor deny.
But you want to kind of confirm just as a dude, bro. You don't want to totally deny.
No, you have to have a little mystery.
Okay. Yeah,
just a little bit of mystery.
Okay.
Going on this, and that's actually related to Jerry O'Connell, we have a running thing on, which is, what is your best Kiefer Sutherland story? Because I know you've worked with Kiefer Sutherland several times.
Many, many times.
Jerry was in Stand By Me with him and told him a great story.
Yeah. About when Kiefer gave him weed brownies and Jerry didn't know because he was a child. And they had to shut down production for a day because he got too stoned and he also got lost in the woods.
I have many, many Kiefer stories. All right, here's one that I love. There was a lot of pranks going on during Young Guns.
Yeah.
I mean, the gloves came off. The very first day we get there and there are these boxes in our trailers from 20th Century Fox. And the card says, thank you for being here. Want you to know what we think of you. And so open the box, and it's a cow patty. that Emilio had gotten and, you know, given to everybody in the cast. Right. All right, so now it's on, right? So my rebuttal to that was to, we had a brothel scene, and so the wardrobe department had all these bustiers and garter belts and what. We were shooting on a sheep farm, so I put a sheep in Emilio's trailer and had it put a bustier and garters on it. And, yeah, you know, because he didn't have a girlfriend and kept complaining about it. So I hung a sign on,
helped him out.
Yeah, I did. I hung a sign on his neck saying, you know, take me, Emilio, I'm yours. The funniest thing about that whole story is that the sheep shit all over the trailer because, you know, it was in there by itself for hours. But at any rate, so now going into Young Guns 2, very first night, and I don't drink anymore, but, you know, I used to, I used to try to keep up with Kiefer. And
that doesn't happen. I've even partied with
him. No, but nobody can do that.
No one can. It's an impossibility. I don't know where the man puts it, but it's just crazy. It's, you know. But so we're sitting in the bar the night before the first day of filming, and we're getting lit, and we're coming up with the best prank that we can play on Emilio. And I'm not going to relay that particular story. But so we close the bar. We have a 6 a.m. call. I mean, come on, we're 25, 26 years old at the time. So, you know, hey, we're resilient. So it's January in we were in Tucson, Arizona. And we're going back to our rooms, and we pass the pool. The hotel is a big horseshoe. And Kiefer, you know, whenever, you know, he gets an idea, he just goes when he goes, all right, we're going to go skinny dipping. I went, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's about 20 degrees outside.
Yeah.
I said, Kiefer, it's freaking ridiculous, man. It's freezing out here. He goes, no, look, there's steam coming off the pool. It's heated. I went, no, we're not going to do that, man. No. Do you love me, Lou? Yeah, Kiefer, you know I love you. I love you like a brother. We're going to go skinny dipping.
Wow.
All right, Kiefer, we're going to go skinny dipping. So fine, into the water we go. Great, wonderful, you know, swimming around at 3 o'clock in the morning. Woohoo! You know, and now we got to get out. And it's 20 degrees. Yeah. And he goes, you know where your room is? I say, I know where my room is. Okay, great. Out of the pool we go, grab our clothes, go dashing off. So fine. You know, 6:30 the next morning, I'm on set with a massive hangover. There comes a pounding on my door. God bless him. Mo Dunster was Kiefer's right-hand man. He was an old English teddy boy, you know? Mm-hmm. And, he used to work with Donald, and then Donald gave him to Kiefer to be his, you know, valet.
His valet, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And he goes, do you two go skinny dipping at 3 o'clock in the morning last night? I said, how do you know that, Mo? He goes, Kiefer couldn't find his room for 45 minutes, and he's almost got pneumonia this morning. Thank you very much.
Wow. What a story, man. And by the way, I use that line on a lot of guys. You want to go skinny dipping? Do you love me?
Do you love me?
Yeah. Doesn't work as well,
though.
And
it's just his shower.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, what a story. So you went skinny dipping with Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, yeah.
I would assume that you guys partied enough that you saw each other naked several times.
So you got to know who's, who do you think is more endowed? Who do you think is more endowed out of you and Kiefer probably? This is probably a question for you.
I know who is more endowed.
But if you had to guess.
I don't have to guess. I have physical proof. Well,
he's searching for an answer here, Lou.
First of all, he's Irish and I'm ethnic. I mean,
there you know,
go. So what does that mean? That. I don't know anything. I'm just racist.
Oh, great. While we're on this, I want to ask, I'm changing tone a little bit. What do you think of Charlie Sheen now coming out with this? I know he was one of your co-stars.
Yeah.
And
I knew this question was going to come up.
Well, I think it's interesting.
No, it is interesting. And here's what I will say about that. First of all, yes, Charlie is an old and dear friend.
Right.
And so my only public comment would be to wish him and his family the best. I hope the best for his health and his well-being. I know that, thank God, we're at a place now where it can be managed. And I know that he will take every step that he can to handle that.
Yep.
Magic Johnson's been living with it for 20 years. Beyond that, I'm not going to make any comment because to me, there's so many people out there, especially with social media, that are just dying to become part of the conversation,
right,
and to put forth their agenda and to make comment and to make judgment. And I just, I won't be part of that conversation.
All right. Well, the reason I ask is the difference between you and them is you are actually friends with the man. And that's why, that's why I brought it up.
And that is exactly why I wouldn't comment on it.
Exactly. Good answer.
Okay, I have this question here. So this is a Obama question. I hate to go back to this, but love it. Okay, good. Since La Bamba, like every time you get on a plane, people must say stuff all the time, right?
Yeah, you know, some people make jokes about it. I mean, speaking of which, there was another Kiefer story. We were doing Young Guns, and they put us on a Learjet to come back to do a meet and greet. Yeah, no, and at 25, I'm going, yeah, this is so cool. But yeah, they sent us back to L.A. to do a meet and greet with exhibitors, distributors, everything else through 20th Century Fox, and drinking on the plane. We hit some turbulence and must have dropped a couple of hundred feet. And, I literally, you know, got white knuckled. And Kiefer, you know, was unflappable, literally turned to me and went, la, 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 bamba. You know, I said, not now. It's not funny, Kiefer. Timing. Okay. Too soon.
Do you ever feel like that could have been like part of your destiny? Like whenever you get on planes, does that ever pop in your head?
I would like to think, you know, as opposed to what The Cure had to say, that God does not have a wicked sense of humor,
right,
you know?
Right.
I just don't, and I don't think he likes the media that much. So I don't
That's
know if God
point.
Would do that to me, you know? However, now with kids, it's so funny. It's like, wouldn't it be ironic? Wouldn't it be? Yeah, that'd be just wonderful. That'd be freaking great.
Have you been to the crash site of the plane?
No. I get invited every year to go up to Clear Lake, Iowa, because they do a big event. I keep hoping to make it, and I'm always, thank God, working. But I've stayed very close with the family, and baby Mario, he was a baby in the film, now has his own band, and they play a lot, and I'm in touch with him, and he goes, Lou, when are you going to come up and jam? Come on, you know? So no, I've not done that, but, you know, I should.
Is it wild that, playing a character like that, that's so prominent and like, you know, it's like so inspiring probably for so many people, like not only in like Latino culture, but also like in music, mm-hmm. Do you kind of feel, and with that character being deceased, is it tough to like, cause you kind of embody that? I mean, mm-hmm. are people or the world puts that on you kind of, what's that like?
Yeah. I mean, to a lot of people in the world, I am Richie Valens, you know,
yeah.
I mean, literally. So I thought he was dead.
Oh, I'm
I believe it, you know, and
part of me, you know,
and I guess it's because at the time Richie wasn't as identifiable as say Elvis, you know, or Jerry Lee Lewis or anybody like that, or even Buddy for that matter. But you know, I think the film and thank goodness my portrayal, you know, took him from being a footnote in Buddy's history to his own mm-hmm. rightful place in rock and roll history. And the one story that I can relate that I think sums it up best is that the family and I got very, very close. The entire family call me Richie from day one.
Oh, that's cool.
First day of working up in Watsonville in the apricot orchard sequence. You know, half an hour before my alarm is set, I get a banging on my door, and it's Richie's mom going, Richie, time to go to work, you know?
Wow.
And so cut to after the film has come out, after it's done incredible things, I find out that Connie, his mother, had a terminal illness, and she held on to see all this happen. And we were at an event being hosted by the then mayor, Tom Bradley, declaring it Richie Valens Day.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were at the Million Dollar Theater in downtown L.A., and while Mayor Bradley was speaking, Connie was in a wheelchair next to me on the stage, and I feel this tugging at my sleeve, and I look down, and she looks up, and, you know, there's tears in her eyes. She's very proud for this day, and she looks at me, and she says, you gave me my son back.
Wow.
And so, you know, that sums it up for me, and it's also why I am never annoyed by my association with him, with the family, with that film.
That's amazing. I mean, that's an amazing story. His mother passed the year that the movie released, right?
Yeah. And then I was at her funeral where they did a double interment with her in Richie.
You know, yeah. Wow. Yeah. And they're buried together in
San Fernando. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Is there anybody else that you'd love to play?
Oh, yeah, there's not a lot of, you know, people that, you know, I'm never going to play Nelson Mandela.
No.
You
know?
I'll put it out there.
I'd pay to see it.
Or Winston Churchill, you know. I mean, so I mean, that is limited. I mean, the fact that the 33 is a true story, I mean, that's hugely, you know, I think amazing and inspirational. And those guys are still alive, and they love the film. They're very happy with the film. You know, people are loving it out there. So I, you know, want to continue to spread the word to go see it, because it's life changing. I mean, it'll touch you. It has the kind of heart that La Bamba had.
Wow.
There was a moment in time where we were investigating the possibility of playing Ferdinand Marcos.
Oh, wow.
Who's probably the most famous Filipino other than Pacquiao. But I mean, his life is so massive that we just couldn't find a way in.
Yeah.
I mean, it spanned decades. It spanned, you know, the Second World War, the Vietnam War, you know, into the late 70s. It just, I mean, and a lot of shoes.
I was going to say, let me play Imelda.
Exactly.
Just for the shoes, you know, and the costume alone.
Well, the shoe budget would be huge, you know, but that's shoe business. Hello. Thank you very much. So, you know, but I mean, things like the 33 or even like Richard Ramirez, man, they just fall through the transom, you know. I mean, so I've stopped predicting, you know. I mean, the Night Stalker came to me in a very interesting way, is that
so crazy.
I had done this lovely little film with my old pal Edward James Olmos, mm-hmm. who I also did a true story with, mm-hmm. Stand and Deliver.
He comes up in here a lot, doesn't mm-hmm. he?
Eddie, well, yeah, you know, Eddie's, I don't know, Eddie's iconic, you know. But
Jack Nicholson's here?
No, but Jack Nicholson could walk in the door at any minute. You never know.
Wait, Christian Slater just got here.
Yeah. But I'd done this film called Philly Brown. Gina Rodriguez, who is now Jane the Virgin, I played her mm-hmm. dad. It was a beautiful, beautiful movie. I won Best Supporting Actor at the Milan International Film Festival. And in receiving the award, I was sitting next to this filmmaker, Megan Griffiths, who won Best Film and Best Director for a thing she did called Abandoning Eden. Mm-hmm. And we spent the evening together, and she saw clips of Philly Brown and immediately went out and found the film and watched it. And 2 years later, you know, calls me and says, you know, from that night, I've wanted to work with you, and I have this, you know, role playing Richard Ramirez, the serial killer.
Wow.
I was like, okay, so you sat next to me, and that's the first thing you thought of. Okay, all right.
I was just watching American Horror Story, where they had the dinner with all the serial killers, mm-hmm. and there was a Richard Ramirez. So
I missed that episode. I got to go back and see that.
It's very interesting.
I got to ask this. So which airline scares you the most?
Which private planes? You know, I got no problem with commercial unless they bump me. And flying back and forth to Longmire, you know, because I work 3-4 days a week and I get 3-4 days off. And I'm, you know, since Santa Fe is so close, I fly home a lot. But that ups my odds for getting, you know, flights canceled. And it's just, I got stuck a couple of times last year, and that just pisses me off. But no, my wife refuses to let me get on private planes, you know, and with good reason.
And which airline do you prefer?
You know, I think I got to go with like Qantas.
Yeah,
it's pretty fantastic. You know, I mean, you get these pajamas and, you know.
Get pajamas?
Yeah, you get pajamas on Qantas. Huh. Yeah, you know. Yeah, it's pretty.
I don't know.
But, you know, yeah, there are other good. I mean, I fly American an awful lot. But
Do you have a moment that you can think of, which is the most surreal moment for you in Hollywood?
Yeah.
At a point which was just craziness. I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe this is happening, whether it's professional, personal, or a party or something like that. Is there one moment that you can think of that pops in your head?
There's a ton of them.
I'm sure.
But you know what? The La Bamba premiere. I was so thrilled because the 33 just premiered at the Chinese Theater.
Yes.
And I haven't had a premiere there since La Bamba 28 years ago. But I remember I was at the after party, and, you know, I'm a green kid from Texas, man. I mean, this is all like blowing, you know, over my head. I have to keep pinching myself. But I remember at the after party, I'm there and I look up and there's John Fogerty, you know, CCR.
Wow. Yeah,
and
of course.
And they're not letting him in. And wow. I went up and, you know, I said, hi, is there a problem? And, you know, John Fogerty says, well, I guess I'm not on the guest list. I went, do you guys know who this is? This is John. Mr. Fogerty's with me. And so that was like, yeah.
That was an I made a moment.
Yeah, that's right.
Very cool.
A question from a fan. For Lou, which one with Blindspot will we see you in the next season alive?
That's a very good question. I wonder that myself. I mean, I didn't know I was going to get shanked until they did it. I was like, oh, really? I'm going to get shanked in prison.
That'll give you more Latino street cred, though, for sure.
Oh, man, you know? I mean, I've been wearing the orange jumpsuit a lot lately. It's like, you know, and listen, anytime a guy is mopping in the hallway, you don't think I don't know what's coming? Come on. You know? The thing that gives me hope is this. Number one, I work with Martin Garrow on Stargate Universe, and the son of a bitch killed me 3 times. But you know, that's science fiction. They can bring you back, and no, he was actually in an alternate reality, and blah blah blah. So there's that. And just knowing that, I mean, it's this clandestine black ops and, you know, all of this, you know, sort of nefarious stuff going on. I mean, the door is open, and, yeah, and we had a great, great time. I do remember, though, I did the first season of 24.
Yeah.
You know, and literally there wasn't a script there. My manager calls and says, hey, listen, they want you to do this role, 2 episodes. You and Kiefer and Dennis Hopper in a bunker. I said, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. That's, you know, that's an easy answer.
Yeah.
And then Dennis Hopper shoots me in the back.
Wow.
You know, and when we were filming it, nobody knew that it was going to blow up the way it did, you know. So, after that, I'm calling Joel and I play poker with the guy. Every time I sit down at the table, I say, you know, you never saw my body. You never saw my body. You could bring me back. Put me in a wheelchair. That's fine. But you can bring, you know, second, third season, whatever.
Yeah. So the answer is you don't know right now yourself.
No, I have no idea.
Okay. And that's cool. And that's what's really unique about Hollywood is that even, you know, like A-list talent, I mean, even amazing actors like yourself are still, you know, waiting to find out certain things.
Now, you did a pilot for Aquaman.
I did.
Are you like, fuck, why? Because it's so big right now, this, you know, this superhero Marvel franchise and all that sort of stuff.
You know what? It's like Wolf Lake, you know, that I did for CBS. If it had done, you know, I've been ahead of the curve so much, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, if Wolf Lake had been made, you know, now it'd be huge.
Right.
Aquaman, Mercy Reef is what we were calling it. And I've never seen it. A lot of people have told me it's really good, but it'd be like, you know, opening up a vein again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you put your heart and soul into something and then all of a sudden they say they're not going to pick it up. I see no reason to watch it.
Yeah.
Because
then
I'm just
completely
going, look, come on, it was really good. What are you thinking? And you know, I mean, the CW was a brand new network. They knew it was going to be expensive. I think they chickened out at the 11th hour. Yeah. They were like, oh, good, this is a big commitment. You know, we're going to spend a lot of money on this. You know, but no, now you know,
my God.
I mean, please throw a stick. You're going to hit a superhero.
Exactly.
And
on the CW, they've got Arrow, they've got all those stuff now.
I know.
Flash.
But they didn't roll the dice, probably 8 years ago did that.
Man. Yeah. All right. I think one more question each and then we'll move
on. One more question. So you were nominated for a Golden Globe, Best Supporting Male Actor.
Yes.
Congratulations. In addition to a Tony and all the other awards that you have received, you lost to Martin Landau. Neil Patrick Harris was nominated the same year. Do you think in best 2 out of 3, could you beat Landau?
Wow. Depends on the role.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he went on after he was nominated for, he won for Tucker that year.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that movie.
Well,
that
was great.
That was a great movie.
But then he lost to Kevin Klein in A Fish Called Wanda, which is kind of crazy, you know? It depends on the role.
Maybe
you know?
3 out of 5, maybe.
Maybe 3 out of 5. Okay. You know, because I mean, but then you know, Marty goes on to play Bela Lugosi in Ed Wood, and that was freaking brilliant.
Yeah,
you know,
great.
So
did he
you
win
know,
for that?
He won.
He won for that.
Yeah.
Okay, my last question is a fan question from Christine Haynes. How do you prepare for the role of Henry on Longmire? Have you immersed yourself into the Cherokee history?
If I were playing Cherokee, I probably would have. I actually play Cheyenne.
There you go, Christine.
There you go.
That just shows you American education.
Yeah, no, like I said, specificity.
Yeah.
Yes. When I first got the gig, even before I went in for the audition, I knew that they were based on a series of novels. So I immediately went out and got the books. I'm a big reader anyway. So Craig Johnson has become a very dear friend of mine. As a matter of fact, he's out there promoting his collection of short stories called Wait for Signs, and I wrote the foreword to that.
Cool.
So
Wait for Signs.
So I actually read a couple of the books before going in. I have now read all of the books.
Right.
Over the years, but one of the first things I did as well, as soon as I got the role, is that I knew that we had a technical advisor, Marcus Red Thunder, who is also a very dear friend of Craig's and is one of the inspirations for Henry Standing Bear. So I called up Marcus and I said, listen, man, I got to go to the source, got to go to the well. And I flew up to the Lame Deer Reservation in Montana just to hang out. And
beautiful
to,
up there.
Yeah, to soak up some of the culture and the people and get to know them and be specific about it. I visited a lot of high schools, a lot of retirement homes. Met with the tribal chief, Leroy Stang, and was blessed by a number of the elders and did sweat with a lot of the brothers. So, you know, yeah, I wanted to get it right, and I wanted the nation to know that I was going to represent them in the right way. And as a result, you know, I went back last year and read a commencement speech from Craig at the high school graduation.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
And then went through my naming ceremony as well. So,
wow,
yeah.
Very cool. All right, well, let's end that round with that.
Wow, you could end up in politics. Have you thought about that?
That's a good question.
Yeah, you know, I served on the Screen Actors Guild board for 3 years, and then I also was...
Well, Melissa Gilbert was on there.
Yeah, she was our president at the time.
Her.
And she saw it.
He's a huge Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, L-H-O-P, bro.
Yeah, I like that.
So good.
And I also, you know, I spoke before a House Senate subcommittee on Veterans Affairs for the Filipino War veterans and got them their status as veterans back. They had been conscripted in, you know, 42, and then through an act of Congress had their veteran status taken away in 45 after we won the war.
Right.
Wow.
You know, and so for 60 years, these men were not recognized. So I spoke there. But just, you know, being in the halls of Congress and, you know, buttonholing a bunch of, you know, senators and representatives and whatnot. I mean, nothing changes from high school. It's literally like, hey, vote for me. Hey, I'm supporting this bill. Hey, I'm running for class president. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Right.
And so I don't know if I'd have the wherewithal to be that political.
Right.
You know, so but, you know, I do. You know, I do try to weigh in on things that I think need attention and to do my job as a citizen. You know, and I think we all have, you know, a duty as citizens to be involved.
Well, it seems like destiny keeps attaching these things to you as well, which is, you know, I think that seems like somewhat of a calling, and it seems like you're doing your part.
I try to, you know, I mean, it's one of my mentors. He had a phrase. He's a Native American medicine man, and he said, you know, you're a thunder voice. You are thunder voices. People who do what you do, you are thunder voices. And what you say goes far beyond your own vision, far beyond the horizon, and touches lives that you will never see. So make sure that when something comes out of your mouth, it's worth saying.
Very cool. Yeah. All right, man. You've got to pick a winner of that round because this is still a game.
Oh, my God.
And then we have one more round after this, which is a quick round.
You know, I can't. I just, that one was so close.
Well, that's your job.
Yeah.
I've been called to be judiciary here.
You know, it's like I've judged on Iron Chef America. And
same thing.
You know, it is because the dishes are so fantastic that you have to nitpick. And
that was Rachel versus Guy. Was that one or
no? No, that was a different one.
No, I competed on that and
won.
Yeah,
on
he
that
won
one.
That. Just like you won I'm a Celebrity and Get Me Out of Here.
You've been effective.
You're
a winner.
I try, man. Yeah, you know, I bring my game face.
I like that because a lot of people do stuff like that just for attention, but you go in and you win.
I try. Well, and the other thing is the longer I stayed, the more money I was making for charity.
Good
so
point.
That
exactly.
Was, that's one of the biggest reasons I did it. You know what? I'm going to go with Matt.
Yeah.
So now we got a dead heat. You know what I'm saying?
Gracias.
Yeah.
There you go.
De nada.
That's about the extent of mine. All right. So that brings us to round three.
The Raper.
The Raper.
T-shirt. That's what it said, man.
That's awesome.
Juancito, the Rape, the Sweet Raper.
That brings us to round three, which is our great debate.
Okay.
And we pick a topic that Theo and I will each have a different side on that
for
we will
minute.
Then, for 1 minute, that then we will then turn into a group discussion.
Okay.
And then it's a wrap. And you have to pick a winner of that round, which will then decide the entire podcast.
Wow.
And Theo, what is the topic today?
The topic today is just going to be Trump's wall. That's what we're going to go with.
Okay.
So since we brushed on it a little bit earlier, just ironically, that is what happened to be the topic. I'm going to go first.
1 minute on the clock.
I think that we do need a wall in America. I think we could use a wall on both sides of America. I think it's a scary time where it feels like there's not a lot of accountability for who's here. Like people don't know who their neighbors are. And I don't think I feel like it gets focused too much that we're like ostracizing like specific cultures and ethnicities. I just think there needs to be like a serious roll call done here in America of who's here in this country. And at some point you have to stop the inflow of people coming in so that can be figured out. And I think that if there's borders that are allowing stuff to, you know, people to flow in, I think we've got to come up with some better system. And I think that a wall is a good way to start.
Wow. Okay. My minute on the clock. I think who the fuck am I or anybody to tell anybody where they can and can't live? And I think there's just as many problems with Americans as far as being responsible for certain things as there is a chance of anybody else coming in. I know there's a lot of stuff with the Syrian refugee stuff right now and not wanting them to come in. But I feel like we live in the freest country in the world. And anybody should be able to come here and experience that. That is the basis of our country, is this just melting pot of freedom and an awesomeness. And I don't think a wall is the answer. I mean, look at Berlin. That was ridiculous. You know, a wall is definitely not. There might be an answer to direct to for this issue, but it ain't a wall.
There you go. Wow.
LDP, whoa. Thoughts?
Yeah, no, a lot. Actually, and the tenor of the room changes. yeah, well, I don't think a wall is an answer. Like you said, it works so well in Berlin. you know, I think just iconically speaking, it's the wrong way to go. Do I believe that we need immigration reform? Absolutely. Do I believe that we need a support system not only for our military but for our police force and for, you know, the other governmental agencies that are supposed to be, you know, watchdogging this? Yes, it's a huge issue, but what I don't like is the xenophobia and isolationism that a wall very tangibly would represent to me. And listen, man, I'm a first-generation American. I stood next to my mother when I was 16 years old when she took, you know, her oath of citizenship. And I was incredibly, incredibly proud of her. I would not have the life that I am leading had I not come to America. I was born on a Navy base in the Philippines. I've been an American citizen from birth. But, you know, I've seen the slums in the Philippines. I've seen the shanty towns in Cape Town, South Africa. I've seen, you know, the villages, you know, in Mexico and Southeast Asia. You know, we are fortunate to live in the greatest country in the world where the American dream is a reality. So, yes, people are going to want to come here. But that dream was built by immigrants. Yes, they were Irish and English and, you know, primarily white to begin with. Not to mention the fact that there were a few people living here that weren't white, that, you know, were the original Americans. But to say that now we want to close the borders and refute the contributions that immigrants and ethnic communities have made to this country, to the life's blood of this country, to the status of this country in the world, I think would be looking backward.
Agreed. So the winner of that round is?
I'm going to have to go with you, Matt, because I fall on the political side of that fence.
No, I think very well said. I think that's a great, it brought a lot of unique thoughts to my mind as you're saying that, and I think that's what, you know, these discussions are about.
Completely. Well, dude, so in other words, I win the entire podcast, yeah? That's 2-1.
Don't look at me like that when we have a date now.
Well, this is a whole endowed story, myth I'm very interested in.
If you can do a 19-year-old USC student's voice, then you'll definitely have a date.
Is that it? That works?
That's it, bro. Yeah.
You're a chicken hawk then, huh?
Is that what they call it in native culture? Huh?
No, they call it on Broadway.
Okay. All right. And I'm racist again.
And homophobic.
Okay,
there you go.
Good. That's a twofer.
So I just won the round big time. I've won the podcast. Well, listen, LDP, dude, thank you so much for coming in here.
My pleasure. Yeah, 100%, man. It was an absolute blast.
Such an honor, man. Like you say, you've always been ahead of the curve. I mean, if the curve, which it seems like is totally catching up to you, then I can only imagine the heights that you're going to be able to have. And with the background that you've had, you know, the people you're probably going to be able to continue to inspire and be that that thunder voice, you know, it's cool.
I appreciate that.
And we have the 33s out now.
The 33 is in theaters. Absolutely.
People can see that. Blind Spot, we're not sure.
Not sure. Longmire, we'll start filming our fifth season in March, and it'll be out again this time next year.
And Wait for Signs, you wrote the opening.
I wrote the foreword to that. Yeah, I'm actually smarter than I look. Night Stalker. Hopefully, you know, keep your ear to the ground. We're entered into a lot of festivals, and we'll find out where we're going to pop up first.
Would there be any possibility of another Young Guns?
Dude, they killed us all.
Oh,
we're dead. It would have to be Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Ooh,
you know,
so that's a possibility.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll reboot the franchise.
Yeah, they'll reboot it with younger people, and freaking Justin Bieber will be playing Kiefer's role.
That's true. My God.
And who would play you?
Who's out there right now? You know,
probably
what?
Selena Gomez.
No. Yeah, more than likely because she's got the hair. I would support that. But, you know, if they did Young Guns the Musical, I'd vote for Bruno Mars.
Ah, there you go.
Ooh, that's a great
Chavez! Chavez!
Can I get an O'Donna before we go?
I had a girl. Theo was her name. Since you left me, I've never been the same. 'Cause I love my girl. Matt, where can you be? Where can you be?
All right. I just got my prize.
Wow.
Thank you.
That is a prize. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, man.
My pleasure. Wow.